after that gets edited out, we'll move on with the episode.
Welcome to the Dynasty Warzone podcast, a division of DynastyFootballFactory.com. We take you onto the front lines and into the trenches of the fantasy football season. And now, here are your hosts, Mike Jernigan, Lawrence Cheney, and John Sheps.
All right. Welcome in to episode number 15 of the Dynasty Warzone podcast. We are the flagship podcast of the DynastyFootballFactory.com. With me is Mr. Lawrence Cheney and Mr. Mike Jernigan. What's happening, people?
Hello, everybody.
How is everybody doing? I'm feeling extra savage today.
Extra salty. Why are you so salty? Tell everybody
extra
why you're so salty.
Extra savage.
you're extra salty. Tell them about your little golf excursion and how you are one shot away from some money.
Yeah, so I mean, I had some buddies come up from Oregon. Well, my best friend's two cousins came up from Oregon. One of them is a stud, and he's going to Oregon State next year to golf. We had a four-man scramble, and at the end of the day, we get into the clubhouse to see where we're at. Those guys took off. They thought we were toast, and we were one stroke out of the money for $200 apiece, and I am salty, but also savage.
I feel bad for this ringer who came all the way out there to help you, and you guys ended up losing.
Yeah, and we used probably about 86% of his balls.
Yeah.
So.
It happens, man.
We had to use a couple of mine because you have to use a certain amount of, you know, each other's.
Well, I hope at least the couple hits. You had to use were respectable.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. I had.
So I had you, a couple you, of you had a tough day today. Mike Jernigan had a tough week. I know he escaped a blazing fire, a raging fire where he's working at. He's been working tirelessly.
Yeah, they had a little bit of a hydraulic fluid fire, and it was not a good situation. Melted a lot of electrical stuff, so I've been pretty much living at work for the past 3 days, and I'm probably going to be for quite some time, a long time from now. I'll still be at work. I'm going to start setting up a recording studio there this week, and well, I think I'm going to have to do that.
Here's the thing. All this stuff that we're complaining about right now is so much more manageable in September, October, and November, in December, because it's football season. But right now, it's all of this is weighing heavily on us. So let's dive in. Let's sit back. Let's take this hour to really get into the football frame of mind so we can forget these off-season issues that we're dealing with right now, right? Every week, we're repping for the DFF Network. We got the new guys over there at the IDP Edge Crushers. Check them out if you're in IDP League, especially if you're a first-time person in IDP League. For me, that was me last year. So these guys will guide you through there. They'll hold your hand. They'll help you. And they'll make you look like an expert, all right? People will be asking you soon for advice. And then we got the guys over at the Fantasy Fellas at the FF Fellas. They're our boys as well. So go ahead and check out their episodes, all right? So this week, what we're going to do, like every week, we're going to talk news and rumors. And then this week, we're going to continue on our divisional breakdown, and it's going to be the AFC East, okay? So this is the last division of the AFC, and from then, next week, we're going to go on to the NFC, and that's going to be a little more fun because we actually got dogs in the fight in the NFC. So and then we're going to finish with an Ask Dynasty Warzone segment, and we're going to call it a night, right? Before we do that, LJ, tell them where to find us.
Yes, you guys can find us at Dynasty Warzone on Twitter. We are in the DFF network up on DynastyFootballFactory.com. And the podcast itself can be found on iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Blog Talk Radio, along with the DFF YouTube channel. If that's your thing, if you like YouTube, I don't really like YouTube. But if you like YouTube, go on there, watch, subscribe, comment, like, do all that good stuff.
Yeah, man, like.
How can you not
subscribe?
Like YouTube?
Well, I mean, I use my phone all the time, and if you close out YouTube, you can't, the music or whatever.
It's frustrating.
Yeah, it doesn't continue to play. It turns off. So, yeah.
It's very frustrating. That's a frustrating thing. You need to figure out a way to get past that, because then I won't mind streaming it from YouTube, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Maybe we should write somebody a letter.
I wasn't thinking about the phone aspect of it, but you're right. When you're listening to a podcast, I can see how that would be obnoxious, but a lot of times when I'm just sitting on my couch at home, instead of trying to find something on TV on the 200 channels I have of nothing, I'll just you know, smart TV, flip it to YouTube and find some funny stuff there.
Go on YouTube and find some old Steve Smith highlights. That's something I like to do. He is, dude, I watched one highlight from him I used to watch over and over again before football games when I was playing football. And there was one clip of him after he scores a touchdown. He comes up to the camera and he goes to the camera. He goes, "If my mother was out there, I'd beat her like a drum also." I was like, after that, I put him on a little bit of a pedestal because that is, like you said, LJ, earlier, you're extra savage. That's extra savage. Well, hey, why don't we give an update, Mike, on this Dynasty Warzone Listener League? Can you do that for me?
Yes. So we have five spots left. Five spots. That's it, folks. So get those entries to us at Dynasty Warzone on Twitter or dynastywarzone@gmail.com. Anything you can think of, be creative, you know, videos, songs, whatever. Use your imagination, send it our way, and hopefully you can get a spot in the Listener League.
This week alone, somebody wrote a rap, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I wish he would have rapped it for us, but just writing it was good too. It was good.
Yeah, and that was his entry. So he's the latest. So now we have five spots left. I'm going to keep with the theme from last week, come correct. Bring it, come hard. Maybe if you want to write a rap, record it, do a little dance. I haven't seen anybody do the MC Hammer clam dance yet. You do that, do like 15 seconds of you going back and forth and some MC Hammer pants and you're in the league. I'm telling you right now, that's it.
He says, come hard.
Yeah, come hard, man. Come correct. Dude, all right, okay.
Shit. We're all 12.
I told you I'm feeling savage.
Yeah. Well, after that gets edited out, we'll move on with the episode now. So let's move on to the news and rumors, fellas. LJ, you got some news about some wide receiver trouble. So why don't you tell us about it?
Yeah. So, I mean, we got some news last week about Jeremy Maclin getting released. And also, I believe it was David Harris from New York. The Jets got released, who was their linebacker. And soon after that, people speculated about Eric Decker getting released. Well, the news came out that they're either going to release him or trade him. So I'm just thinking of, you know, a couple landing spots for these receivers. I heard that Jeremy Maclin is in touch with the Bills. He was visiting, you know, Shady up there. So there's, you know, some sense behind that. And then you got Eric Decker, who is rumored to be, oh, well, I guess the Jets are rumored to be talking to the Ravens. So, you know, that could be interesting. That could diminish some up-and-coming dynasty assets in Baltimore.
That's funny because we got a question today. Somebody sent us a question at Dynasty Warzone asking us, if Eric Decker does go to Baltimore, who does that affect the most?
I think it'll affect Rashad Perriman the most, to be honest.
I agree.
I do too. Yeah, I absolutely agree.
Wallace has taken the top off. You know, and I feel like Perryman's supposed to be the possession guy, and that'll hurt him.
And Wallace has done it. You know, he did it last year and looked good, whereas Perryman struggled. So, you know, Perryman's got some ground to make up. He's got to build trust with Flacco yet. You know, essentially Decker does too, but they'd both be in the same boat, and we've seen Decker be a good wide receiver. We're still waiting to see that from Perryman.
That's the thing, too, is like Decker, he showed out quite a bit in a couple seasons. And even with the Jets, he was a reliable receiver. He's been there. He's done it. As much as I've been pushing Perriman, I believe it was, you know, it might have been last week or the week before on this pod when we discussed the AFC North. Like you said, he's unproven, and that will affect him. And the big thing with this is you can never guess and foresee the future of who's going to go where, but it would be very timely with Perriman's current price to maybe, you know, slip him out and get rid of him. And hopefully Decker does sign there. If that was the case, you know, it'd be a win-win for those Perriman owners.
There's definitely targets to be had, though, now with Dennis Pitta getting released in Baltimore because of his hip injury. He got 119 targets last year for a tight end. So, I mean, there's enough to go around. If Decker comes in, he takes, you know, 80 of those. That's still these 39 out there, you know? So there's definitely targets to go around. But I'm also, so we're talking about the Jets here. Did you guys hear about how Christian Hackenberg's looking in camp?
Yes, I see that.
Oh, yeah. We're going to be talking about that later in the AFC East.
Oh, yeah. I don't want to. I'm sorry. I don't want to spill the beans.
Oh, no, you're all right. did anybody think he was a great quarterback before they told us?
Bill O'Brien.
No, I did not. I didn't like him as a prospect, and I've got tweets to prove it. So,
MJ, why don't you bring us to Detroit and tell us about your man Taylor Decker?
All right, so I'm taking up the spot as the person who talks about Detroit and the Browns every single week. But in Detroit, we kind of had some important news here. So we know Taylor Decker, the offensive lineman, he tore his labrum a couple weeks ago during offseason training activities. We didn't really know how serious that was until today. And it came out his projected timeline following the surgery he had is 4 to 6 months. So that can take him well into the season. And that can be a huge loss to this offensive line that we've talked up on this podcast is being improved. And it could be a big hit to Amir Abdullah's potential value, at least for the first part of this year. What do you guys think about that?
Anytime you're talking about left tackles going down, because Decker was the left tackle, correct? He was slotted to be left tackle. Like, that's just a huge blow, regardless of the level of play that you get from that left tackle. If there's a starter, you know, there's so little quality in this league at that position that when your starter does go down, it's a huge blow, man. There's few things worse than that for a team. So it will affect them quite a bit, I feel. As long as they can get someone in there that's, I guess, somewhat competent, it will mend itself somewhat. But, man, that will be a huge loss.
Yep, and it could very well affect Stafford's value this year too, because you know he might not trust his backside there.
And maybe this will increase Riddick's value because he's going to have to dump the ball out quicker, and maybe the routes won't have times to establish, and he'll be dumping it off to his main man Theo Riddick, and that could help me out because I have him on two of my rosters.
Or Eric Ebron across the middle.
You mean Eric Ebron in the end zone?
Well, could be. He'll just drop it. But
that's what I was going to say. I was going to ask: is he going to catch it or drop it?
Well, I didn't want to go too big on that.
Well, my news this week is Marcus Mariota is considered. They're saying right now he's going to be full go for training camp in July, which is huge news because he needs this time. He's got a bunch of new weapons, like we talked about last week. He's got Corey Davis there, Tywan Taylor. He needs time to work with Derrick Henry, who's probably going to be working his way towards RB1 on this roster. So it's big news that this guy is going to be there for training camp, and he's going to get the full offseason now.
Yeah, that is huge news. He's got to, like you said, work on that timing with his wide receivers. And, you know, I think we still thought he was going to be a good quarterback, but this is definitely a bump to his value for this year.
I think that when it comes to Mariota, he just needs to get a full season under his belt. I know that, you know, his rookie season, he only played 12 games. Last year, he did a lot better. He played 15. But when it comes to that position, you need someone that's going to be out there every Sunday. And it's huge for him. It's huge for his players. It's huge for the team as a whole. And I can't wait to see him continue to grow and, you know, really be a dominant force at that position, because I feel he can be that. He was he graded really high for me, I guess you could say, coming out. And, you know, I like Mariota. Even though I hate the Oregon Ducks, I do like Marcus Mariota. He's a very likable person. So,
yeah, he's fun to watch, and it's even funner for me because I'm not an AFC guy. I'm an NFC guy. So he doesn't play the Cowboys. I really don't have any distaste for him, and I get to watch him. It's basically just bonus. Anything he does, if he produces, it's just fun for me to watch. And I also have him on a roster of mine, so I'm definitely pulling for the guy. But again, it is big news because you need that offseason program. You need that offseason work. So now we'll take that from an AFC team now to an AFC division, and that is the AFC East. And this is our main segment for this evening, and we are going to be talking dynasty perspectives on all offenses for these AFC East teams. And let's start with LJ and the Miami Dolphins.
LJ and the Miami Dolphins. All right, so the biggest thing when it comes to this team is they do have some pretty valuable receivers, in my opinion. They have Jarvis Landry, obviously, Devontae Parker, Kenny Stills, and they have their depth, which, you know, everyone was pretty high on Leonte Carew last year, who I think he can be a decent receiver, but he just needs those opportunities. And of course, through this these OTA sessions and mini camps and all that good stuff, of course, he's getting hyped again. And I know this is going to bump him up like it did last year. You know, people believe in him. He was one of those players that people were really high on. But I don't see him supplying any of these receivers unless there is an injury. And they got Isaiah Ford, who is a rookie coming in, who, again, a lot of people were high on. I even seen one person on Twitter have him in the tier one with Corey Davis. Me, myself, wow. Yeah, I was very surprised
to see
that.
That's crazy.
It is. It's nuts. It's I didn't agree with it at all, but I didn't want to start an argument, so I just left it be. And I'm not high on him myself. I didn't get the hype, really. He doesn't do what I want him to do at the position. But so for the receivers, you know, I just wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, maybe their target share and TDs and red zone and all that good stuff, where they finished and their ADP. So Jarvis Landry last year.
Juice.
He got 131 targets for 84 receptions and 1,136 yards. And his target share was 28%. Okay, so he had 4 touchdowns and 12.1 average. So when it comes to him, all the time, you know, last year people absolutely hated on him because of his efficiency levels and all that good stuff. But when it comes to fantasy points, we don't care about efficiency levels. You know, we don't care what they do. As long as they're getting those targets, those receptions, and those fantasy points. I know that plays into it a little bit, but I mean, the guy's a monster in PPR. And when it comes to him, his red zone target percentage, so his share from the quarterback is 17%, and he converted 22% of touchdowns on that. I believe it was 9 red zone targets and 2 touchdowns, I want to say, which is pretty good, you know, considering the type of receiver he is, I guess. His 2016 finish was the 13th overall receiver in PPR, and his current ADP is 25. So I feel that his ADP and his finish last year don't really coincide well, so I feel that's a little rich for him. And this ADP is off of Dynasty Football Factory, of course. Then you got Devontae Parker, who last year he had 87 targets for 50 and 56 catches. He was actually targeted second most on the team. His target share was 19.87%, 744 yards with a 13.3 average, which I believe he is a guy who I think can take the top off the defense. He's you know, for me, he's nice size, obviously. He's 6'3". He's got that length. He ran a 4.45, which I feel is very good for his height and all that good stuff. He has that good catch radius. And last year, his red zone target percentage was lower than Jarvis Landry's at 15%. But he completed, let's see here, he had 2 touchdowns on his 8 targets. So 25% TD rate on that. And his 2016 finish at the wide receiver position was 50 overall at that position. His ADP right now is 53. Again, it's a little higher, but I can see the upside with him. He was a very hyped up prospect, and for a good reason, in my opinion. I was personally pretty fond of Devontae Parker as a prospect, and I think, you know, they're onto something there with him. And I think another full year under his belt, he's going to be able to produce at a good level. Then you got Kenny Stills, who he's the guy that takes top off the defense. He surprisingly only had 42 receptions last year. I felt like he had a better season than Devontae Parker, but I was wrong. He did, however, have a better season when it came to touchdowns. He led the team in touchdowns. You had Jarvis Landry and Devontae Parker at 4, and Kenny Stills at 9. But the thing is with him is he only had 11% red zone target percentage, and that's normal for him. You know, he's a deep play. He's an explosive receiver. He's a guy that's going to take the top off and get those deep yards. And it's funny because he even missed out on, I believe, 2 against my Seahawks last year. He just plain dropped the ball when Tannehill hit him in stride, and he just dropped the ball, and he could have won that game for him. His finish last year was 46 at the receiver position, and I believe I lost his ADP. Crap. Anyways, so at that position, I thought I read it down.
It happens.
I must have deleted it.
You can't be excellent all the time.
I know, right? Like, so
only most of the time.
When it comes to that receiver position, I feel like they could target Devontae Parker a little more and get him more involved. I don't think anybody's going to supplant these three receivers. I think it's a good core for Ryan Tannehill. Then I want to get to the running back position. So Jay Ajayi and nobody else. I mean, there's going to be the Damian Williams and Kenyon Drake on third down, and I think they can do that. I think that would be best suited for them. Even though Ajayi produced at the college level, he averaged 10.5 yards per catch at that level, and he actually, you know, was pretty productive in college. So that would be awesome if they could open that aspect of his game for that offense. So, you know, it would add value. But so I just had a few nuggets on this. Last year, with Mike Pouncey, their center, in the lineup, JJ had 5 games. And he had 109 carries, 650 yards for a 5.9 average and 5 touchdowns. The 10 games without Mike Pouncey, he had 151 carries, 622 yards for a 4.1 average and 3 touchdowns. So I think Mike Pouncey's a huge part of this offense. And when he's healthy, he only had, like I said, 5 games last year. And that team went 4-1. You know, and Ajayi, he did have a 200-yard-plus game without him. But I think that he's a key factor for this team, and I think he's a key factor for Ajayi going forward. And if he's able to stay healthy and really shore up that O-line, which is sort of on the uptick, I think Ajayi can continue to produce because he had some monster games behind him. And then the tight end position, you got Julius Thomas, who right now is ADP is 137, and I think he's a sneaky play. You might only get 1 year out of him, but what Adam Gase was able to do with him in Denver, I know a lot of it had to do with the quarterback, but he had 12 back-to-back touchdown seasons. You know, and 2015, when Adam Gase was the offensive coordinator in Chicago, he had a little resurgence. Well, not, I wouldn't necessarily say a resurgence, but a breakout for Zach Miller, and he made him, you know, a startable tight end. So I think Julius Thomas, they need help down in the red zone. I think he can be big for them and can have a solid year. And you got the coaches blowing him up saying he's going to be a 10 touchdown guy this season. He's done it before, so I can see that. And then you got Ryan Tannehill at the quarterback position, which is what he is, and I do like him. I think you know, he needs to be more efficient as a passer, but it's there. We've seen him have a 27 touchdown season, and you know, last year he only had 19 touchdowns, but we've seen him ball out, and he uses his legs well, and he's a guy in any super flex league that I'm more than happy to have to start. So, also, I forgot to mention the addition of Anthony Fasano at tight end, which he's a great blocker. You know, he helps out in that, so that'll add to Ajayi's value as well. So, you know, I think right now Ajayi is a good buy. I just bought him for, it might have been a little bit steep. Sheps was shooting me down on this, and I bought Jay Ajayi for Tyreek Hill and 2 2018 seconds, which is steep, but I feel like I'm stacked at wide receiver, and I was really lacking at running back. So that's what I went out and paid for Jay Ajayi. So what's your guys' thoughts?
I wasn't shooting you down. I was shooting down the person you traded with for making you give that much.
Well, see, this is the thing. Is I just offered that and it was accepted, right? Like that. And you know, when right. they do that, it's like, man, I just left something out on the table. Why did I?
Right.
I could have maybe offered just a second.
Both sides are boom or bust. I mean, now if Tyreek Hill doesn't do half as much as he did last year and he's just a gadget guy, you're a genius. You know? So, and I think it's the trade is in more in your direction. It's more in your favor because it's more likely that Tyreek Hill doesn't pan out. It's hard for a guy who's a gadget guy to, you know, stay in the NFL and dominate and produce on more than just punt returns and kick returns. So
yeah, it might work out. Especially when he's being asked to be the wide receiver one, or what that's what they're stating him as. And I don't see him as that dude. You know, he's not a Brandon Cooks, in my opinion. So
right. So we'll see. But now going back to the Dolphins, you know, listening to what you said, it sounds like they have a lot of weapons, right? And it could be I don't know if it's – it's they're gassing these guys up. You know, we know what Jarvis Landry is. I'm a believer. I like Jarvis Landry. I think he's a great football player. I think he's a guy you want on your team. I like the way he plays the game. But Devontae Parker, you know, like you said, he's an up-and-coming dude. He might be the wide receiver one there. And then Julius Thomas, they're expecting him to blow up. And then you got, you know, Jay Ajayi, and then you also got Kenyon Drake, who he can catch the ball out of the backfield, and Laremy Tunsil's developing, so that's going to help the offense. So it seems like they have weapons. And what I want to see, and what I need to see, is Ryan Tannehill take a step. You know, you got all those weapons. Can you be a QB1, you know, in Dynasty, regular fantasy football league formats?
That's exactly what I wanted to touch on here. He was awful last year. And I mean, I know he ended the season, I believe it was an ACL tear, if I'm not mistaken, and he missed a couple games. But he was, he finished as the 27th ranked quarterback in fantasy last year.
Jeez, I didn't know it was that bad.
Yep, and that was with him missing three games. And it looks like before he missed time with the ACL, he was 22nd before the injury. So, I mean, he was having a bad year just across the board. Tannehill, he's the same guy every year. Somebody tries to hype him every year, and I don't see it. And I haven't seen it for 5 years. And, you know, he's 28. I feel like he is what he is. We know what we're getting with Tannehill. And I just don't think he's that, you know, franchise quarterback that the Dolphins need to really, you know, even hope to challenge the Patriots.
Right. I drank some of the Kool-Aid last year on Ryan Tannehill. I bought one share, and I was a little bit disappointed. But I'm going to give him one more season because he does have the weapons, and maybe he's going to develop. And maybe, I mean, all we need, you know, top 12. Give me top 12 numbers with that offense. That's not too much to ask. So now, MJ, hey, if you don't got anything else to say about the Dolphins, why don't you tell us about those Buffalo Bills?
Oh, the Bills. Okay, let's talk about the Bills. All right, at quarterback, Tyrod Taylor, of course, who the Buffalo Bills hate for some reason.
It makes no sense.
No, I don't think he's a horrible quarterback. He probably should be given a fair shake. But despite a complete turnover in the front office and the coaching staff, Taylor is on an extremely short leash again. He was barely asked to do anything as a quarterback the past couple years, but he did all right with what he was given. He had a 37 touchdown to 12 interception ratio in his 29 starts. His completion percentage over that span was 62.7%. Now, he does only average about 7.5 yards per attempt, which leaves something to be desired. But, you know, he is a dual threat guy that is usable in fantasy. But until he lands with an organization that trusts him, or this new management, you know, really puts some faith in him, I don't think he really has that super high ceiling. So they brought in Nathan Peterman, and they have Cardale Jones on the roster. And I don't know that either of them are great or long-term fantasy answers, but you have to keep an eye on them because, you know, like we talked about with Taylor, they don't like that dude. And if they can find a reason to start one of these guys over Taylor, I think they just might. So then, of course, you got LeSean McCoy in the backfield. Everybody knows about him. He is going to be 29 when the season starts, but he's still producing those top-tier numbers that we're looking for. He should probably continue to do this season, especially since it's a thin backfield behind him. With Mike Gillisley leaving for New England, Jonathan Williams would be the next man up. And he wasn't somebody we expected to have much fantasy value going into this offseason, but he finds himself as the guy you'd assume to be the main backup in a run-heavy offense, so he kind of inherits some value that way. He really wasn't anything special in the limited work he saw last year and only had a 3.5 yards per carry average on 27 carries. And he also fumbled twice on those 27 carries. So that is not a good number. Breaking news. The fantasy community is kind of telling you to buy him now while he's cheap. And I sort of see the value and the opportunity, but I don't, however, see anything telling me that he's a premium talent. So, I mean, I guess if you can buy low, it wouldn't hurt to take a shot, but I suspect most people are already kind of overvaluing him. So don't overpay on this guy because I don't think he's a long-term answer in Buffalo. The Bills also signed Patrick DeMarco in the offseason as a fullback, but don't look for him to have an impact. In his 5 years in Atlanta, he's had only one carry for 0 yards. Isn't that ridiculous? So he's mostly just going to be that blocker from the backfield. In the wide receivers, of course, you got Sammy Watkins, who leads the way on the outside. When he's healthy, you're just never going to be sure when that is. So the Bills failed to pick up his fifth-year option. He's going to be playing for a free agent contract this year. He's only 23 and has the talent to be a really good receiver, maybe even elite. It might be a little risky, but if you can get him at a discount this year, it, you know, now is the time to look for that discount because people are getting tired of him missing time, I think. He could potentially wind up on a high-powered offense next year, and you'd find some value in that. The Bills traded up to get Zay Jones out of East Carolina with the 37th overall pick in the draft. And you guys know that he's somebody I'm high on. So think about this. He excels in the slot position, which means PPR value immediately. He goes to an offense that has nothing behind a guy who's injured all the time. And after this season, the injured guy is going to be a free agent. So, you know, who's going to kind of inherit that main pass-catching duty for this team? It's probably going to be Zay Jones, who runs a 4.45 40 and was in the 94th percentile in Spark score. His senior year, he only dropped 6 of 164 catchable targets. So this guy is really good, and I think people should be aggressive in trying to get him in your dynasty drafts. I'm fairly certain this team is going to address the gap that Watkins' departure is going to leave, whether it be in next year's draft or free agency, or, you know, we got to alter this a little bit, like we talked about with Macklin a little bit, but I'm going to touch on that a little later. But I think Jones is going to be a mainstay in this offense and start getting work probably early. Philly Brown is behind Jones, but he isn't very good. He has that opportunity for immediate playing time, but I don't have any faith in him. I have serious doubts that a short, only moderately fast wide receiver can be valuable as the third option in a run-first offense with a quarterback with below-average accuracy. They've got a couple other wide receivers too, but let's face it, they don't throw the ball enough to make most of those below average receivers relevant. At tight end, they still have Charles Clay, who finished as tight end 16 last year. The dude always seems to be playing through a knee injury, and he's kind of strictly a matchup-based streaming option, in my opinion. They really have nothing behind Clay as far as fantasy is concerned. Gary Barnage did visit the Bills, but that was at the beginning of May and nothing is done yet, so maybe it didn't seem like a good fit. If Barnage were to sign, I'd assume that he would steal enough work from Clay that neither of them would probably be usable, but, you know, that's still a long ways off. And, of course, we got to touch on Jeremy Macklin. He's been to Buffalo for a visit. He's got several ties there, including LeSean McCoy, who's actively recruiting him. And he had a good relationship with him in Philly, so it seems to be a good fit. If he were to come to town, this team looks much better. But until that happens, they're probably the third best team in this division. So that's the Buffalo Bills, guys.
Well, so what do you, if you're buying Sammy Watkins right now in draft picks, what would you say you'd spend on him?
What I remember one of our first episodes, what were we gauging it at? I believe me and you weren't buying him for anything more than 1.08. And then we had MJ willing to do 1.05. I think that was the case. That was, what, 2 months ago? 2.5 months
right.
ago?
Right.
So my take now, since most of my rookie drafts are over, we're talking about future picks for future players. You know, I would try to get him for someone who is, I guess, close to him production-wise right now, based off his last season. And I would throw out, I mean, it would be hard for me to throw anything more than a late first for 2018. That's my price right now.
That's hard because unless a Sammy Watkins owner has incredible depth at wide receiver, I feel like you're not going to be able to grab him for that. But if you're buying Sammy Watkins, are you believing that he's ever going to be the Sammy Watkins we expected? Or do you feel his career is going to be just continuously one story after the other with him being injured? Like, should we believe that he's going to come through and be a dude?
I don't know that you should put a whole lot of faith into him staying healthy. My whole point there was I have a hunch that maybe the owner of Watkins is getting frustrated with him missing all this time. And if his value is depressed with that owner and you can get him at that discounted price, you know, you might want to take a shot if you can get him for reasonably cheap enough, because we've seen the dude be really good when he's on the field.
He's a star.
Yeah, exactly. And that's my take with this is that's the most I'm willing to give. But he's right now, based off everything that's going on, like you said, the frustrated owner, he is it. You're able to get him at a discounted price. And I honestly think I would like to have Sammy Watkins on my team. You know, the first reason is because this is a contract year for him. And that's huge. You know, players fall out in their contract years. So let's say you get him at a certain price and you want to sell him down the road after he blows up. You're able to get, you know, 10 times the value than that you are right now. And the second thing is that I want to point out. So Brian Hawks with DynastyFootballFactory.com, you can find him at BD Hawks. That's H-A-W-K-E-S. He dropped something the other day on Twitter, and it was a comparison. He says, player A, year one, 54 receptions, 959 yards, 8 touchdowns. Player year two, blew up, 79 receptions, 1,100 yards, 10 touchdowns. Year three, 41 receptions, 580 yards, 2 touchdowns, foot injury. Then he labels player B, who is almost exactly identical, you know, give or take a few receptions here and there. Second year, popped off for over 1,000 yards and 9 touchdowns. And then last year, this player too only had 430 yards or 2 touchdowns. And it's Julio Jones versus Sammy Watkins. So their first 3 years are almost identical. And it makes you think a little bit, you know, because of the type of player and prospect that Sammy Watkins was. He had an insane breakout age, or insane dominator rating as a freshman in college. Just all that good stuff. It just points to a great prospect, and he was a great prospect. But going forward, he's a player I want to buy as cheap as I can, and I'm willing to make those moves right now just because of the impact that he has on games and the type of player we know he can be when he's healthy. It's just, I mean, the first 3 years, he's still young, so there is a chance. You know, once I seen that tweet from Brian Hawks, it let me know that there is a chance. You know, Julio Jones went through...
So you're saying there is a chance.
Yes, that he went through almost exact same thing that Sammy Watkins went through.
Well, and even if you're not just talking about the contract year thing, he's a free agent next year. So, you know, let's say Jordy Nelson goes down again and decides to hang it up, and Green Bay all of a sudden needs a wide receiver. You know, Sammy Watkins is going to want to go to a competitive team. And if he winds up on Green Bay and can find a way to stay healthy, look out, man.
It's a problem. It's a problem for the NFL, and it's a problem for all the owners who didn't buy Sammy Watkins.
Yeah, definitely.
That's right.
So I would definitely go out and test the waters with him, because he's a guy who could blow up again and have that resurgence for his career. Tyrod Taylor... I like him as a quarterback, and even though his...
Buffalo doesn't.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing that sucks. It's like, man, you can only... There's only so many competent quarterbacks in this league. There's 32 jobs. How many of those quarterbacks can actually get the job done? Not many, but I feel like Tyrod Taylor is one of them. So, you know, he could hook up with him big time this year as long... They just mismanaged Sammy Watkins' foot injury so bad, and that starts from the front office, you know, continuing to put him out there with an injury. And it's like, man, get him some time, give him some rest. Go send him to surgery right now. You guys aren't going to win anything. Look at your squad. Like, get him off the field. Right. And they continue to mismanage that, and it's hurting him in the long run, because the coaches there knew they weren't going to be there for too long. So it's like they were trying to do anything they could to keep their jobs, and it sort of ruined him in the long run. So that's one thing that frustrates me.
Well, you know what? I think that's enough for Bills talk right now. So why don't we take it from the Buffalo Bills, and I'm going to take it over to a GOAT, right? And this is the GOAT, and he's a member of the New England Patriots, who I'm going to break down right now. And that is, I'm going to start with Tom Brady, all right? The GOAT, greatest of all time. He only played in 12 games in 2016, and he was QB15. Now, this guy turns 40 August 3rd, all right? His wife's already coming out, saying that he had a concussion last year. She's already complaining. You have to think that this joyride's going to end soon. But while he's active, he's a QB1. He's a stud. He puts up numbers. He's a dude. But the future of this organization is Jimmy Garoppolo, in my opinion. He's 25 years old, and he's an unrestricted free agent after this season. it's likely that they're going to sign him. They're either going to franchise him or sign him long-term, because there were rumors that he was getting offers from New England was getting offers from Cleveland. I don't know if there was any other organizations trying to trade for him, but I know there was Cleveland who had given New England pretty significant offers, and they declined it. So they must envision him as a QB of the future. This is the last guy, you know, if Tom Brady retires and he becomes the next man up, this is the last guy in the NFL that is going to have been brought up by Brady and Belichick, right? Underneath Brady, being the apprentice of Brady as well as the apprentice of Belichick. So that's got to be worth something as well. In 2016, in the two games he played, he had a 68.3% completion percentage, 502 yards, 4 touchdowns. So those are pretty good numbers. I'm buying him. He was highly recruited in the NFL coming out of Eastern Illinois, you know, around the draft. I believe he went in the second round. So he's a dude. He's the future. Now it's going to get a little messy, all right? It's really clean in that QB room in New England, but when you go to the running back room, especially for dynasty owners and fantasy owners, it is a mess, right? So the LeGarrette Blount, he had 18 touchdowns last year. Nobody's duplicating that, all right? There's no running back in this backfield who's going to do that, but they have to replace that somehow. So I think the two physical backs that they're going to be using is probably going to be Gillislee and Burkhead. Gillislee, who they brought over from Buffalo, 26 years old. Last year, he had a pretty big season. It was the biggest one of his career. 101 carries, 577 yards, and 8 touchdowns. So the guy's got a nose for the end zone. He also had 5.7 yards per carry. Only had 9 receptions, though. So he's going to be that third down guy, short yardage guy, possibly the red zone guy, goal line guy. So he should get, you know, probably the bulk of the carries in this offense. But another guy who can compete with him for some carries is Rex Burkhead. So this is why it's going to be messy, because I believe some weeks it's going to be Gillislee and then some weeks it's going to be Burkhead. But Burkhead is a little more of a tweener between the two. He had 17 receptions last year, but he's a little better out of the backfield catching the ball. But I don't think that New England is going to use him too much like that, because they have two other guys that I'm going to talk about. But his stats last year, Gillislee had 101 touches and he had 74. Gillislee had 5.7 yards per carry and he had 4.6. So, and also, you know, Buffalo had a better, they used more of a rushing style offense. So I feel like maybe the numbers are a little doctored towards that, because their offense was a little more dominant on the ground. But, you know, Rex Burkhead was brought in before Gillislee, so they might have a plan for him. But now the two receiving running backs we got are James White and Deion Lewis. So I believe last year going into the season, Deion Lewis was the guy that everybody wanted after the 7 games he had in 2015. But after he tore his ACL, it never cleaned up, and I believe he missed a decent portion of the season, at least the first half. And James White came in. He finished, he was running back 26 in 2016, splitting carries with LeGarrette Blount and then Deion Lewis at the end of the season. So that's pretty good in a PPR format. That's just below RB2, and he definitely had RB1 weeks. Okay, and 39 carries for 166 yards and 4 touchdowns, which is pretty good for a guy who's receiving the ball out of the backfield. But this is where his numbers were good. He had 60 receptions, 551 yards, and 5 touchdowns. So he had 9 touchdowns altogether. And now what they're saying coming out of New England is Brady and Belichick have been won over by James White. Take that for what that's worth. You know, I don't know if I truly believe that, because I think they're going to just mess with us every week and it's going to be a different running back, and it could be this guy, Deion Lewis. And in 2015, he finished running back 42, and that was only 2 spots behind James White. So when they've had full seasons together, you know, actually, I'm sorry, he only played in 7 games. James White played in 14. So he was 2 spots behind James White, playing 7 less games in 2015. So take that for what that's worth. But he played in 14 games over the last 2 years. And over those 14 games, he had 113 receptions, 517 yards. I'm sorry, no, 113 carries, 517 yards, 4.5 yards per carry, 2 touchdowns. And then over the 14-game span, he had 53 receptions, 482 yards with a 9.1 yards per catch and 2 touchdowns. So it is a mess in that backfield. I do like those PPR running backs, though. I'd stash James White, Deion Lewis, Gillislee, Burkhead. I mean, basically, it's wild card, all those running backs. So if you don't have to pay too much, it's worth having one of them in the backfield. It's just going to be a little frustrating at times trying to figure out who is the dude in that backfield. And then we're going to go to the wide receiver room with their reigning guy who's been there for a while now, who's probably the number one target guy under Tom Brady, and that's Julian Edelman. He just got a contract extension. He's there until 2019. He's a slot guy, so, you know, bringing in Brandon Cooks, it should affect him a little bit. But, you know, you can play slot left and slot right, and Brandon Cooks isn't very efficient out of the slot on the right side. So, you know, maybe they're going to play on one side and Edelman's still going to get his looks. But I believe as long as Tom Brady's there, Julian Edelman's the dude. He had the third most targets in the NFL for wide receivers in 2016 with 159 targets. And that's very impressive. He's going to get the ball a lot early and often, and he's a PPR monster. Like I said, as long as Brady's there, I don't care if Brandon Cooks is there. I don't care if Malcolm Mitchell's developing, Rob Gronkowski's healthy. I'm still buying Edelman, and he's still going to be a wide receiver too for me. At least he's going to have wide receiver 1 weeks as well. He's a target hog, like I said, and that's just how I feel. So now we're going to bring it to Brandon Cooks, who's the newest member here. He was the wide receiver 10 in 2016, wide receiver 13 in 2015. So he's climbing. He had 117 targets last year, 78 receptions, 1,173 yards, and 8 touchdowns. So he's a ball player. He's explosive. They want to get the ball in his hands. He's going to take the top off the defense. And Tom Brady can throw the deep ball. So he's going to have a few games where he's just going to blow up with long touchdowns. But you know what you're getting with him. Yeah, but he is going to be competing with Julian Edelman and Rob Gronkowski. And they're not going to force feed anybody the football. What they're going to do is they're going to find the open man. And Julian Edelman's always getting open over the middle. And, you know, I think Cooks is going to have his big games and he's going to have his quiet games. But supposedly what they're doing with him in OTAs is they're playing him everywhere. They're playing outside, inside, slot left, slot right, and they're moving him all over. He's doing a good job picking up the offense. So if he's going to be versatile, I think versatile is a big key in anything New England does. If you're showing that you're willing to do what the team needs you to do, I think they're going to find a way to keep you on the field, and they're going to find a way to get you the football. After him, we got Chris Hogan, who was everybody's sweetheart last year. At least I'll speak for myself. He was my sweetheart last year. I thought going into New England, he was going to tear it up. He's 28 years old. He's been in the NFL for 5 years. It doesn't seem like that, but he's been around for a while. Last year was his first time he started over 4 games. So he never started over 4 games in his career besides last year. And last year it was 14 games. He had 58 targets, 38 receptions, 680 yards, but he had 17.9 yards per catch. And that was the highest yard per catch for anybody over 25 receptions. He was tied with DeSean Jackson. So, you know, that's pretty impressive. So that's what you got going on there. He's another deep threat. So he's going to be – and he's a wide receiver 4. He might have a week or two. If somebody goes down, he's going to have big weeks. But he'll have weeks where he has wide receiver 2 numbers. But, you know, if you bought him last year, stash him and play him here and there, spot starter – and then we got Malcolm Mitchell, who I think is the future, right? If Garoppolo's the future at the QB position for New England, I think Malcolm Mitchell's the future at the wide receiver position. I don't know how much longer, you know, I don't know if New England's going to pay Brandon Cooks after this season or what, but I think, you know, it showed a lot with Malcolm Mitchell that Brady was able to trust the kid, a rookie, you know, a team that is a year-after-year championship contender. He was able to trust this rookie when he had veterans on the roster. So that's pretty impressive to me. I think that says a lot about the kid. He played in 14 games. He had the best target reception percentage of all New England wide receivers over 40 targets. He had 67% targets to reception percentage, which is pretty you know, that's pretty impressive. He had 32 catches, 401 yards, and 4 TDs. And I just think he's going to continue to get better. And I think as Garoppolo takes over, you're going to – because they worked together in the offseason when Mitchell was the wide receiver, you know, on the second team, and Garoppolo was the QB of the second team. So they're going to have some sort of rapport, and I think that's going to mean he's going to get better and better. And I don't think he's too expensive right now. So you can buy a guy like that and stash him, and in 2 or 3 years you should see heavy dividends. And that's going to bring us to tight ends. We got Rob Gronkowski, who is pretty obvious. I don't need to say much with him. He's obviously the tight end number one. He's the most dangerous, dynamic tight end in the NFL when he's healthy. And that's the big thing. When? You know, do you want to hold Rob Gronkowski, or do you want to sell him for everything you can get? Because you can get a buttload of picks for this guy, or you can hold him and have him for the 7 games he's going to play in a season. He's only started all 16 games one time in his 7-year career. All right. But that being said, when he's on the field, the dude scores. He scores points, he catches the ball, and he's a touchdown machine. He's had above 10 touchdowns 5 times in the last 7 years. So, I mean, if you're a championship contender, you're keeping this dude because you know you're going to ride him to a championship in the amount of games he plays. But if you're, you know, rebuilding, I'm selling him. I'm selling him to a contender. I'm getting picks in young players. And then the next guy now is Dwayne Allen. This was kind of when this signing happened, I think it was kind of a big deal. People were talking about it, and it's kind of settled down now that, you know, they just re-signed. They extended Edelman, and they brought in Cooks. But the guy's only 26 years old. He's a 5-year veteran, but he's very young. 6'5", 255 yards. I'm sorry, 255 pounds. He averages 11.5 yards per catch in his career. And now I'm going to talk about another tight end from last year in New England, and that was Martellus Bennett. He saw 73 targets in 2016. And, you know, Gronk didn't play in every game, but he still saw his targets when Gronk was on the field. He had some of his biggest performances with Gronk on the field, and one of them was in Week 10. He had 7 catches for 102 yards, and that's with Gronk on the other side. So I think Dwayne Allen, he's an athlete. We know he can catch the ball. We know he's good in the red zone. And I think he's going to put up tight end 2 numbers this year. And then when Gronk's hurt, which is going to happen, he's a tight end 1. He's a low tight end 1. So that's it for the New England Patriots. Why don't you guys tell me what you think?
There's so many mouths to feed. I think, what, like you talked about, the backfield being messy. I think you can say that for the whole team. You just don't know where the points are going to go from day to day. And it almost, you know, sounds ridiculous to kind of be turned off by the prospect of owning offensive weapons on a team that just scores points almost at will. But it's going to be confusing. You're never going to know who to start on that team. You know, like you said, maybe in a PPR aside from Edelman and Gronk when he's healthy. But yeah, good luck guessing which running back or wide receiver aside from those guys is going to excel.
The thing with this is Bill Belichick, that backfield is a fantasy mess, man. It's just, they have great players back there. They, you know, it's pretty apparent that Bill Belichick is looking at analytics and efficiency numbers on rushing downs and how that works into winning football games, because that's all he cares about. He cares about winning football games. He doesn't care about your fantasy team. He cares, what it looks like is he cares about your best ball team, because that's what he built there, is a team that's full of, you know, high-end best ball players, because that's like MJ said, it's going to be hard to guess week to week. And we've always had trouble with that backfield trying to figure out what he's going to do, because he game plans for each individual game, and it just depends. You know, he'll ride the hot hand, you know, for maybe 3 series, and then he switches it up. It's just, it's nuts there. So the biggest benefiter from this is going to be obviously Tom Brady, and I think he's going to put up monster numbers again, be in the MVP contention. And he's a guy that he still, I feel, has a couple years left. I don't think he's really going to play out, like you said, Sheps, you know, that the whole 5 years that he plans to play, because age will catch up to somebody eventually, regardless of the stuff you do with your diet or whatever, the Tom Brady diet. I just think, you know, eventually it's going to catch up to him. But he does have possibly the best, this has to be the best offense he's ever had as a quarterback. And man, I feel like he's going to put up monster numbers this year. So if you have him on your team, man, I would be very happy about that, and I'd feel like I'm a contender. So when it comes to the whole receiver position, I don't know what to do with that. I think, like MJ said, the constant's going to be, I believe Mike said this, but the constant's, it's going to be more so Julian Edelman still and Gronk when he's healthy. Outside of that, it's just going to be a big, giant fantasy mess that I don't know what to do with, you know. So that's my take on the Patriots. They're building the Golden State Warriors right now.
They're building it. Well, let's go down to the Meadowlands, right? And let's talk about Christian Hackenberg and the New York Jets.
Yeah, well, first of all, what is kind of funny to me is I was going to make the joke, do we really have to talk about the Jets? But then I realized I scribbled an awful lot of notes for a team that is absolutely devoid of any kind of talent. But the Jets, I remember when I started thinking about the Jets, I remember like when I was in driver's training when I was 15 years old, and during one section of that course, they brought in an EMT to talk to us about the dangers of like distracted driving and impaired driving and stuff like that. He brought with him a 3-ring binder that was filled with photos from, like, you know, serious car crashes and accident sites, and, you know, and they were pretty gory too, because they really wanted to pound it home, you know, you pay attention while you're driving. And I remember looking at those photos and the feelings that they conjured up when I saw them for the first time. And I felt a little bit of that when I started really looking at this roster. Like, it was the same feeling, like, this is bad. for a pro team, I can't believe what I'm looking at.
They're tanking.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. In a serious way too.
I mean, they took two safeties in the first two rounds, right?
Oh,
I think they took me in the second. Yeah.
They went back to back safety.
Actually, yeah, it's, I don't know.
It's a bold strategy.
You guys keep talking. I'll look it up.
All right. Well, I can start talking about the Jets.
Go ahead, man.
You know, nobody really needs to listen to this breakdown anyway. But the quarterback position is an absolute shambles. You got Josh McCown. He's the heavy favorite to start, and reports out of OTAs are that he's the best quarterback on the field. Well, duh. He's not somebody you want for Dynasty or probably any form of fantasy, to be honest with you. He's 37-year-old career journeyman who's going to be replaced by the Jets in next year's draft. He's probably usable in like two QB leagues, I guess. But I suspect even if you like are streaming quarterbacks, there's always going to be a better option. So behind McCown, you have Christian Hackenberg and Bryce Petty. Hackenberg, you know, has been horrible in OTAs, or at least those are the reports. And on this podcast, we'd like to talk about guys that can make an impact on your dynasty team. So that being said, we don't need to talk about these guys. They both kind of look like lukewarm garbage. They also have a person on their roster named Dane Evans, who I didn't even know existed until I started looking into the Jets.
Let me guess here. Tulsa? No. Yep. Is it Tulsa?
He was. Okay. It was Tulsa. He was in. Yeah, and there's no doubt in my mind you knew he existed. I should have just texted you for information on this guy. But, yeah, he was an undrafted free agent out of Tulsa. He's undersized, and he ran a super simplistic form of an offense in college. So he's probably not somebody to be rostered. But, you know, when it's all said and done, he doesn't have anybody in front of him. So, like, he could be a serious wild card for playing time this year. I don't know what he is or if he's going to be any good. It doesn't look like it on paper. But, you know, it's just a name to keep in the back of your brain just in case. All right, for running backs for the Jets, you still have Matt Forte. He's decent, but he's 31 years old. With that in mind, there's a new offensive coordinator in New York this year who may help to reestablish Forte in the passing game, which he only played a minor role in last season. Without knowing how involved he'll be on third downs and with the age cliff looming large, I'm very cautious with telling you to go get Forte. But if he's cheap and, you know, he can manage to get the touches, he could be a sneaky flex-type guy on a win-now-type team. The guy behind him is somebody I feel like gets overhyped every year, Bilal Powell. He looked like the premier back last season with his 5.5 yards per carry and 58 receptions. But before we get too excited about Powell breaking out, he's also NFL old, as he'll be 29 years old in October. I actually didn't know he was that old. For some reason, I felt like he was younger. He looks pretty explosive at times, but he's still on a really bad team that's going to be playing from behind a lot. So he'll catch some passes that are going to help in a PPR format, but tread lightly before taking either of these guys. This backfield, on paper at least, looks like it's probably going to be more of a timeshare, and it's not going to have a whole lot of upside anyway. So be aware of that. At wide receiver, they have almost no one anymore. Brandon Marshall's gone. Eric Decker, we talked about. He's going to be released or traded. Quincy Enunwa, he's the man in the offense. Last year, he put up 58 receptions for 857 yards and 4 touchdowns, and he's going to definitely see a heavy dose of targets again this year. Kind of an interesting guy to watch is Robbie Anderson. He quietly finished 6th amongst rookies with 587 yards receiving. He's trained with Chad Ochocinco in the past, and he became friends with Brandon Marshall, and he's now training with him. So he's going to get some information from those guys. This kid is super fast and talented, but he definitely has a bit of that knucklehead factor to him. He was arrested in early May for allegedly shoving a police officer at a music festival. That's not usually a good idea. To me, he's a big X factor because he's going to be forced into production due to lack of options, but he might not have anything between his ears to keep him there. And this is assuming he doesn't wind up in prison. All right. For tight ends, it could be interesting, actually. They still have Austin Seferian Jenkins, who's shown flashes of brilliance, but it's been his personal demons that have held him back. He says that he's been sober since January 21st, and the word is that he's looking really good in OTAs. He will begin the year serving a 2-game suspension from a DUI arrest back in September. He's strictly kind of a boomer bust play, I think, in the tight end position. They also went out and drafted Jordan Leggett out of Clemson. He's not at all an inline tight end, but he's going to compete for early playing time due to Seferian Jenkins' suspension. His college tape is kind of promising, but word from OTAs is that he's struggling with the pace of the NFL game. These guys are both young and with some upside, so let's see what they can grow into as this team matures over the next several years. To be honest with you, I would probably try to steer clear until we know what this team is, because even if Austin Seferian Jenkins is coming back to form, there's nobody to throw the ball to him. I also want to bring up three rookies to keep an eye on. Running back, they picked up Elijah McGuire in the 6th round out of Louisiana. He's not an elite-level guy, but I don't think the other guys here are either. So McGuire ran a 4.53 at the combine. He can catch the ball really well, and he doesn't fumble. For as late as you can get this guy in your rookie draft, I think he might be worth as an, you know, worth it as an upside stash to see if he can wrestle carries away from Forte and Powell. They also took a couple of wide receivers in Ardarius Stewart and KD Cannon. KD Cannon was somebody you heard us talk about on this podcast before. He is super fast, ran a 4.41 at the combine, and looks faster than that on tape even. He apparently isn't good at much other than that since the 49ers cut him immediately following training camp. If he's ever going to have an impact, which almost seems doubtful at this point, it's going to be much later on when he kind of learns more of the mechanics of this role. Be prepared to roster him for years if you're going to take a shot on him. I guess that's the main takeaway from this. Ardarius Stewart, however, is impressing everyone with his toughness. So multiple media outlets have observed that he looks comfortable with the Jets' offense, and he's got a real chance of significant playing time this year, especially with the departure of Decker. Now, again, you don't have anybody real impressive throwing him the ball, but I think his stock is definitely moving up for me. So there's more than you ever wanted to know about the Jets.
I mean, I don't know, man. I like the kid McGuire. I like Ardarius Stewart. I think the young guys, that's the only direction you want to go in, because if they're tanking, you really can't expect. Besides, like you said, some guys are kind of just going to fall into numbers, you know? And I'm not trying to bank on anybody that's a Jet this year, but I might try to get my hands on Ardarius Stewart. I already have myself an Elijah McGuire stock. So I think some of these guys could have a future, but I'm avoiding this train wreck.
So I think I really like Enunwa still. I know if they would have went to him more, let's see here, Fitzpatrick, I know he force-fed the crap out of Brandon Marshall. But even that season with 2015, Enunwa still played okay. And then last year he had, you know, a breakout season. And I like Enunwa. He's really the only guy currently that they can go to. I do like Darius Stewart as well, just because of his ability to run after the catch. And, you know, he outproduced one of the top Devy guys last year, who myself, I wasn't considering him, you know, one of the top guys. He was up there, but he outproduced Calvin Ridley, who is supposed to be a really good prospect. We'll see about that. But I do like Stewart. KD Cannon, man, I love KD Cannon. He got dismissed because I guess he was lollygagging after he caught a deep pass on somebody, so they just said get out of here, you know, for their culture change going forward. I actually seen something from Travis May on Twitter when people were talking about, you know, KD Cannon being undrafted and all that stuff, and he had a good little theory saying that the NFL's blackballing Baylor. Well, you know, that I, of course, me being the KD Cannon truther, I'm going to take hold of that and be like, yeah, they're blackballing Baylor. KD Cannon's an amazing prospect. So I rolled with that. But it's just, yeah, it is a mess. The offensive line, I'm not too fond of that offensive line. And I did look it up. So Marcus May did go in the 2nd round at 39 overall. So they did go back-to-back safety. I knew.
Yeah,
I was thinking he was somewhere in the second or third. I wasn't sure if it was back-to-back. I thought they might have had another pick in between them, but that is nuts. And
it's rare enough that you see a safety go as high as Adams did alone, and then now they're going to use two, you know, top picks for a safety. That's crazy.
Yeah, and they could have taken, you know, maybe DeShone Kizer or something, but there's the theory out there now, based off what the Browns did, that the Jets are going to follow and do the whole suck for Sam, who is Sam Darnold, the quarterback from USC,
right,
and try to build that way. But I think they need to be rotten for Rosen, okay? I think Josh Rosen is the number one quarterback in Devy. I think he's going to be the number one prospect at the position next year. And he just, I feel like what he does at the position is better than anybody across the board in NCAA football. So I think they need to be rotten for Rosen. Hashtag rotten for Rosen, starting it now.
You heard it here on the Warzone.
Yep, we are. That's our new trademark. ASJ is a great talent at the tight end position. He was, you know, a Husky, so I followed him his whole career. But I do like Leggett. It's going to be, they just don't target their tight ends. I know they got a new offensive coordinator, so that could help. I'm rambling about a bunch of nothing when it comes to the Jets because they have nothing. So I think it's just time for me to be quiet and leave it be.
Well, who wins the AFC East? Do we need to ask this question? I guess
the Jets
format. Yeah. They win. They get the best pick after the season. If they're
gonna... isn't that what you meant?
So I guess that's really the only competition. Who's going to be the worst team in the AFCs? But really,
the Jets.
That's not even a competition either. I think the top and bottom are like clear.
We'll go about it like this. So who's going to, which team outside of the Patriots? Or is there another playoff team in this division?
Oh, no.
Man. I mean, maybe the Dolphins. You know.
I don't think
their defense, it might get a little stronger this season. So Charles Harris does anything. So Xavier Howard, is that the defensive back they drafted last year? Is he a guy from Baylor as well, LJ?
Xavier Howard, that sounds like a Baylor, yeah.
I've been hearing good things about him. They're saying he's going to be a lockdown corner this year. So if the defense can step up, I think they'll be able to score enough points to possibly win games. But they can't try to I don't think they can go out there and try to outscore and outshine people. I think the way they need to win is to be gritty, play tough defense, run the ball. But, you know, who knows? So I think it's definitely the Patriots and then maybe the Dolphins. But I don't see anything for the Bills or the Jets. So that's it for our AFC East breakdown. And that's it for the AFC. So we can say bye-bye to the AFC. We get to move on to the NFC.
AFC champion. Week. AFC champion. Who is it?
The Oakland Raiders.
Who do you think, MJ?
Patriots.
I'm going to go with the Oakland Raiders as well.
I'm
tired of these Patriots, man. I don't care. I'll put my hate card out there. I'm a hater. I'm one of the biggest haters.
Khalil DFF. And Bruce. You want to see Bruce back in the Super Bowl.
Yes. So I just tweeted out hashtag Rotten for Rosen.
Well, speaking of hashtags, LJ, that's actually a pretty good segue because now we're going to go into the hashtag Ask Dynasty Warzone segment. So remember, everybody, if you're following and if you're listening, if you add the hashtag Ask Dynasty Warzone to a tweet that's either a poll or a question regarding Dynasty, I'll be able to find it and I can talk about it on the show. So please do that if you want us to talk about it, and then you can hear us say your name, we'll say your Twitter handle, and we'll discuss your question and we'll give you our opinion. So the first one this week is from Sean Laib at Dynasty Goat. Pick one QB for your Dynasty team. Marcus Mariota, Cam Newton, or Russell the Hustle?
Come on.
This one's geared towards you, man. No, you go. You answer first.
Give me the GOAT, Russell Wilson, man. He still has the legs. He was injured last year. Look at his run that he had at the end of 2015. He was the most dominant quarterback for a nice stretch there. Came back, got injured the first game this season, and Ndamukong Suh stepped on his ankle. Then he got injured again in the Rams game, or the Niners game. I mean, freaking twisted his knee up. He's worked from the ground up this year. His velocity, everything, he's built better. Pete Carroll raved about him in the OTAs, and obviously, you know, that happens every year with every player. But it's showing. Russell Wilson looks nice.
But
and
he should have ran it. They should have
They should have ran it. But Russell Wilson can throw the ball from the pocket on the run. He can do the read option. He's going to pick up yards on the ground. Cam Newton's a freak of athlete, but he is no Russell Wilson. He has no – he can't hold Russell Wilson's jock strap. Okay, he's got Jimmy Graham. So, he's got Doug Baldwin. Okay, I'll stop.
This is a Seahawks party right now. MJ, what do you think? What do you think?
So I want to start by giving you kind of a solid argument about the futility of taking too hard a look at quarterbacks, because right now all the quarterbacks are good. So last year in 4 points,
I love that.
Yeah, last year in 4 point per passing touchdown leagues, Russell Wilson. I'm just talking about the three quarterbacks we're talking about in this question now. Russell Wilson finished as the 10th quarterback. Mariota's the 13th, and Newton is the 17th. They were separated by 16 total points, or one single point if you average that out over the season per week. To take it even further, from quarterback number 8 to quarterback number 20, the point separation is less than 30 points, which is less than 2 points per game difference.
This is really bringing this conversation down to earth right now. We blew up. We went on a Russell Wilson tangent. I think the biggest thing with this is
is their ADP. It's all dependent on who you can get later, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So that being said, I have Russell Wilson in this one also. So, you know, Mariota is trending up because of Corey Davis.
But he's expensive. And, I feel like Mariota, you know, I like him. I like him there with Russell. I like his future, but you're not getting him for cheap. It's a big name, and everybody's expecting him to blow up. So, you know, I feel like...
No, a lot of hype. A lot of hype right now.
So it's got to be, it's Russell. We're all on board with Russell Wilson. So
thank you.
Go Hawks, right? Real quick, I want to kind of
voice concerns about Cam Newton. Now that they have McCaffrey there, I can see a scenario in which the Panthers rush for a lot more touchdowns than they pass this year. And he wasn't great last year, you know, and he still has Kelvin Benjamin, who looks awful, as his main receiver. So I mean, I guess you can make the argument that Curtis Samuel at least looks like he could be a step up from Ted Ginn, who dropped a lot of balls. But if Cam's rushing touchdowns stay low, we may have already seen the most productive years of his career, I think.
No, I definitely. And check this out. I got one more thing to drop on this. So based off Dynasty Football Factory ADP, the most current ADP from the end of May, this is their ADP. Marcus Mariota, 62. Cam Newton, 63. Russell Wilson, 65.
There you go.
Wow.
Nutty.
Pretty close. And I think you're getting the steal of the three if you're getting Wilson back at 65. Because I don't think Mariota's quite earned it yet to be above them. I think his stock is trending that way. Never missed a start, but they should have ran it.
Piss off.
Sorry. At least you were there. At least you were there. I was home watching. All right, so we got our next question is from Rich Meyer at rmeyer24. 12-team PPR, Corey Coleman in a 19 first or Jordan Matthews, Kenneth Dixon, Austin Hooper in a 19 second?
I'm a big Corey Coleman fan, but the repetitive hamstring issue kind of scares me a bit. I'm not super huge on the other side of this either, but I think Jordan Matthews has a better than 50% chance of being the best player in this deal. And Jordan Matthews is only 24 years old himself. So strictly kind of for that reason. Well, actually, and I like Austin Hooper's upside.
I like Hooper a lot.
Yeah, I do too. And Kenneth Dixon could be a solid player too. So I know you lose the round in the 19th draft pick, 2019 draft pick, but I'm going to go with the side two of that one.
I think this Go ahead, Chips.
I was just going to say, to me, I think Coleman and Matthews is a toss-up. And looking at that, it being 2018 and not having to worry about this 19 pick till 2 years from now, I would take Kenneth Dixon, Austin Hooper, and a 19 second for a 19 first. I'd take that in a heartbeat, and that's what's going to push it over for me. So I'm taking Matthews, Dixon, Hooper in the second.
Yeah, I don't think it's close at all. And it's funny that these guys are dealing these 19 firsts because – if you guys are out there listening right now, acquire as many 19 firsts as you possibly can. I know it's next year when it comes to Dynasty and everybody gets hyped up, but man, dude, that wide receiver class for 2019 is going to be nuts. I'm not going to say it's 2014 nuts because there's never going to be another class like that, in my opinion. But it's going to be up there. I think it's going to be the best since 2014.
Well, 2014 was bananas.
Yeah, there's nothing.
So 2019 is going to be nuts.
Yep.
They're separate. They're separate. So now we have a third question this week for the Ask Dynasty Warzone segment. And this is a question of my own. Okay, and this is a very important question because I listened to the At the FF Fellas. I listened to their episode this week. I'm sure you guys did too. And they talked about pizza. And these are Chicago boys. And they were posting some pictures of Chicago pizza. And I don't know what that is. Okay, because that is not pizza. The question is, New York style pizza or Chicago style pizza?
And New York is just going to be the normal thin stuff.
Regular. Just regular
pizza. Then Chicago is the deep dish.
Whatever that is that they put the sauce on top. It's like, looks like a sandwich.
So I like Domino's deep dish pepperoni, but I also
Domino's,
like
get the heck out of here. We're talking about New York style pizza and Chicago style pizza, and you say Domino's. Your pizza credentials are removed.
Dude,
you're not to speak about pizza.
I'm up here in the Northwest with China food, okay? Hashtag China food, Eddie Lacy.
MJ, come on.
Well, first of all, you know, Lawrence and I are a long ways away from Chicago or New York, so it's tricky for us to, you know, kind of get authentic with it. But that being said, I'm going to take a run at this one, guys. Okay, so let's talk about portability first. You got to give the edge to the New York because Chicago pizzas are super deep and they're kind of too messy to be anything you want to carry around with you.
Can you get it by the slice? Can you get Chicago pizza by the slice?
I don't live in Chicago, so I don't have a good answer for you there.
I can't imagine how whatever, go on, I'm sorry.
I don't know. I really don't know. I know the styles of pizza and I've eaten both, so I feel like I can be partial in this. But I had to break it down because it is tricky. Anything pizza is good. You know, I'm not going to lie to you. But, yeah, you don't want to carry the Chicago pizzas around. Whereas New York pizzas, you know, they're thinner and lighter. They can be transported easily with less mess. So I'm going to give the edge there to New York. Let's talk about nutritional value. There's almost none on either one, I guess. But with its kind of abundance of crust, the Chicago pizza is full of carbs for sure. It also has room to kind of house more cheese because of that deep dish. So you got to give the edge to New York in the health value as well.
Okay.
With toppings, I'm not done yet. You got me going on something here, okay? I want to talk about toppings next. So the things you can put on both of the pizzas is exactly the same, but on the Chicago style with its larger crust, it conveniently makes like a heavenly basket you can hold said toppings in. So it allows for like a greater number of items, which is never a bad thing.
I see that. Okay.
Okay. So I'm going to give the edge to Chicago there. With the crust, the New York pizzas, they got that thinner, kind of crispier, lighter crust. Well, Chicago pizzas have the thick, fresh bread-like border of doughiness. Both are wonderful to ingest, but I'm going to give the edge to that one on Chicago because who doesn't like fresh bread, okay? Then last and probably most important is taste, of course, and overall. So it's subjective for sure, but when I think about pizza, this is what I think about first and foremost is the taste. Well, both products are made with much of the same ingredients. Only one can be crowned as the undeniable champion of the dinner table, and that, my friends, is Chicago style. It has all the gut-busting, taste bud-pleasing incredibleness that I look for when I want a pizza. Save that light and crispy for crackers. I want something that slides me immediately into carb coma after ingesting. So Chicago style is the real deal, boys.
Well, if we're going to call it light and crispy, you're eating a light pizza. You need to come out and have yourself a real New York pie. I will gladly send one out to you. Have you come out and we'll pick one up and we'll eat some pizza over at my place in New York.
MJ just chose Chicago.
Just chose Chicago.
I feel like he chose New York like three times and then he chose Chicago.
I did not. Oh, okay. That's crazy talk.
Okay.
Well,
I need to revisit my list?
No,
hey, can you talk about it again? Can you run it back for me?
Listen. All right. We got places to go. We got things to do. We got future episodes to talk about. All right. So now we got to move on. It was enough about pizza. You broke it down. I'm a little disappointed in you, my co-host. kind of get putting the dagger in my back right now, but it is what it is. You know what I'm saying? If you like Chicago pizza, you like Chicago pizza. At least you don't like the, you're not talking about Domino's. We're talking about New York and Chicago pizza. But that was an excellent episode. It was a lot of fun. I believe this was probably the most boring of the AFC divisions and the AFC East, but it needed to get done. We got it done with. Next week, we're going to move on to the NFC West.
Yet somehow we still managed to do an hour and 20 minutes. How does that work?
So next week we'll be moving on to the NFC West, where we'll talk about LJ Seahawks, the Cardinals, the Niners, all those guys out there. And that's it, man. So it was a fun episode. I had a lot of fun talking to both you gentlemen, even though Mike put a dagger in my back. But peace
I'm a
out.
Straight shooter, John. You know, if you want Domino's, talk to Lawrence. But I'm going to tell you like it is.
All right.
Little Caesars, Pizza Hut.
They're ready. Little Caesars hot and ready. Papa John's. You walk in there. Papa John's. I had my fair share of that back in the day. All right, everybody. Take care.
See you guys.
Adios.
Head on over to DynastyFootballFactory.com for all your Dynasty news, mock drafts, ADP, and player evaluations for all league types, including IDP and Debbie. We'll be back next week with another episode of the Dynasty Warzone podcast. Thanks for listening.